After a long slog through the pandemic, like other cruise lines, Norwegian Cruise Line has reason to celebrate. The Norwegian Gem set sail from Miami on Sunday, marking the first departure from its home port since the pandemic began 17 months ago. The sailing comes in the wake of Norwegian winning in federal court that it could require passengers to show proof of COVID-19 vaccination. Joining us now is Norwegian Cruise Line President and CEO Frank Del Rio. Frank, good to speak with you again here. Like I just mentioned, you have reason to celebrate. The Norwegian Gem did set sail yesterday. Talk to us about some of the precautions, the health precautions you have taken on this ship.
Yeah, good morning, Brian. Thanks for having me on. So, yes, yesterday was Norwegian Gem. A week ago was Norwegian Encore out of Seattle to sail to Alaska. And on July 25th, we launched our first ship post-pandemic, Norwegian Jade, out of Athens for the Greek Isle. So we're excited to get going again. We'll have 8 ships operating by the end of the third quarter, 17 ships by the end of the year, and we'll have every single vessel in our 28-ship fleet operating by April 1st. So exciting times following, you know, a long period of inactivity. Zero revenue for 18 months. Can you believe that? No, companies just don't survive that long a period of time without revenue, but we managed to, the industry managed to, and we're excited to get back. Look, in terms of health and safety, you know, people throw out this, it's become a slogan, it's become a tagline that their number one priority is the health and safety of passengers, crew, and the communities they visit. We say what we mean what we say, and back in early April, late March, before it was even popular to utter these words, we said, we're not going to sail unless 100% of the people on board are vaccinated. That's the number one priority that we have. It's the best way to keep COVID off the ships. And so we drew a line in the sand. We said, that's what we're going to do no matter what happens all around the world. We're going to be consistent. You know, no jab, no job. If you work for us, whether it's in the office or on ships, you have to be vaccinated. If you're a guest of ours, you have to be vaccinated. We combine that by engaging Dr. Scott Gottlieb, who's become a household name. He is an authority on COVID, and he put together a blue ribbon panel that we refer to as our Sail Safe and Wellness Council. And they also gave us great advice on how to operate safely. So it's not just 100% vaccinations. We test everyone before they get on board the vessel at the terminal to make sure that they're not sick at that moment in time. We test our crew weekly. We have spent nearly $100 million to revamp our air filtration systems. Our air filtration systems now are equal to what you have in a hospital. And a series of 74 other protocols that we have implemented to keep our guests, our crew safe. And so we're off to the races, and we're hopeful that this COVID Delta transmission starts to subside. It should. But in the meantime, there's a pandemic going on in this world, and how the leadership in this country has not stood up to the realities of this pandemic to require vaccinations is beyond me. Can you imagine if 700,000 people in this country died of anything other than COVID, the outrage that there would be, what government would do to stop that? And this government, whether we're talking about local, state, or federal, and I'm not talking Republicans, I'm not talking Democrats, I'm talking government. Our leadership has failed us. And so I'm not going to fail our customers. I'm not going to fail our crew. We're doing the right things, and we hope others follow.
Frank, to that point, let's stay on the leadership topic. Do you find it bizarre that essentially you have had to fight Governor DeSantis and his administration in Florida to keep people healthy on your ships?
It's beyond bizarre, Brian. It's shameful. Here's a state that relies on tourism. It's its number one industry. And the number one priority of any hospitality business is to keep their customers safe. I mean, that's you know, de rigueur. And you would expect that government, again, would do everything possible to support that. Instead, we had to go to court. And not only did we went to court and we won, and we won handedly, if you read the 59-page opinion by Judge Williams, but now the state is appealing that ruling. They want to fight us again. I mean, come on, give it up. This is a pandemic we're talking about. People are dying every day. Florida now is the epicenter of the epicenter. What's it take for common sense to rule? What does it take?
Frank, it's Julie here. One would hope that the customers of yours have common sense. I'm wondering if you're hearing from them that they are choosing you specifically because you are taking this. I mean, you know, as you know, this has become bizarrely politicized, right? But I am curious if customers are saying to you, you are taking this stance, and so we feel safe enough to choose you over competitors.
Yeah. You know, Julie, we had our earnings call about 10 days ago, and on that call, I said that we are better booked for 2022 and beyond than we ever have been at this stage of the booking curve, even besting the 2019 records and at higher prices. We are roughly 9 to 10 weeks ahead of where we normally are at this point of the booking curve for 2022. I think that our very strict protocols is a competitive advantage. I think that those who want to cruise under these conditions would want to cruise in the safest way possible, and we provide that safest way possible. I don't know any other venue on earth right now, whether it's on land, at sea, a vacation, a store, a business, where you can be assured that everyone around you in that venue, in this case, it's a ship, is 100% vaccinated. So I don't know anywhere else other than a Norwegian cruise line, an Oceania cruise ship, a Regent Seven Seas cruise ship, where you can be safer. And I think people are speaking with their wallet, and that's why we're so well booked.
Frank, that's good to hear on 2022 record pricing in bookings. But have you seen any cancellations of late because of what's happening with the Delta variant?
Yes, yes. There's no hiding about it. The spread of the Delta variant has got consumer confidence lower. We saw last week's report. Consumer confidence dropped about 15% from 80-something to 70. And so, yes, people react to the you know, current events. We're hopeful. And that's what Dr. Scott Gottlieb is telling us. That this is a transient spike because of the Delta of transmission. It's going through the population very, very quickly. Multiples of those that are being officially reported as being infected is occurring throughout the country. And so we believe that when you add up the fact that there's roughly 180 million Americans who have been vaccinated, 35, 36 million officially, that real number by the experts' estimation is really 3 or 4 times. So we're over 100 million people been infected. You get to, you know, 280, 290 million Americans out of 330. Hopefully we're close to the end here.
Yeah, fingers crossed, although it just seems to be getting extended. So given all of this, when you look at visibility into 2022, when you talk about record bookings, record pricing, what do you think the momentum is on that front? How long do you think that is going to continue?
Well, a lot has to do with the variant and the transmission rates and the prevalence around the country. We saw how quickly things change. For the better and for the worse, you know, in early May, Israel and the UK were duking it out for the number one lowest prevalence in the world. And 7-8 weeks later, they were duking it out for having the worst prevalence in the world. So this virus can make you look good, make you look bad, literally overnight. We now believe, I think the experts believe that we're getting closer to the end, and certainly we were a year ago with the vaccines. The vaccines are working as intended. They're keeping people from getting severely ill. And so society has begun to learn to live with this virus. You know, the experts also tell you that it's never going to go away. This is going to become an endemic an endemic situation in the sense that it's going to be reoccurring. It'll be seasonal. We may have to take our COVID shots annually, much like we do flu. But society is learning to live with it. We're certainly learning to live with COVID on the cruise industry. But you've got to take that hard stance. You got to make those hard decisions. You can't please 100% of the people 100% of the time. You got to do what's right, and we're doing what's right.
Frank, I like what you said on the earnings call that you have not forgotten how to run a cruise line. And to that end, when is Norwegian back to generating cash flow, back to reducing the debt on its balance sheet, and then ultimately back to bringing new ships to market?
Well, we believe that we will have break-even cash flow. That's my good friend Russell Galbert ringing the bell this morning with a with a company he just de-SPAC'd, Airspan. Congratulations,
Russell
and the team there. Yeah, but look, we think we'll have break-even cash flow by the sometime in Q1, late Q1. We're very excited to take delivery of our newest ship, Norwegian Prima, next July. We were fortunate that during the pandemic, we didn't take any new ships. We had taken delivery of Norwegian Encore in December of 2019, Regent Splendor in February of 20. And then we had about a 30-month period without a ship. And before the pandemic, we were all crying the blues that we don't have a new ship for 30 months. It turned out to be a blessing, but we're very excited about bringing on board Norwegian Prima in July of next year. She, you know, in my 30 years in the cruise business, you learn a lot along the way. You build ships along the way. And we threw the kitchen sink at Prima. She is fabulous. She's beautiful. She's got every amenity you can think of, every restaurant, every lounge. The staterooms and suites are just off the charts. Brian, I can't wait to show you around Norwegian Prima when she makes her debut in New York. And hopefully Julie and the rest of the gang will be able to join us. But she is a special vessel. We've got six of those vessels coming online between 2022 and 2027. We have three ships coming online in 23, one for each of our brands. Oceania will launch a new model that's called Vista, and Regent Seven Seas, the third of the Explorer class vessels. So we're all excited about the new ships coming online. Look, the way things look today, assuming that we can actually operate the vessels that we are standing up with a schedule, I think the back half of 2022 could be the best back half the company has ever had. That's how good bookings are for the future. That's how good, strong pricing is. We'll have taken delivery of Norwegian Prima. And we will have the Regent new vessel that I mentioned, Splendor, that came out in 2020, and Encore also contributing, which they would have never contributed in the back half of any year. So, look, Norwegian was the best performing cruise company out there in terms of yields per capacity day, EBITDA per capacity day, gross margins, ROIC. And so, like I said, we still remember how to run a cruise line. We have the youngest fleet. That means the most efficient fleet, the fleet with the most balconies. Balconies generate high yields. We've got, in essence, between Encore, Splendor, and the four new vessels I mentioned, we'll have six new vessels out of a fleet of 28. And so the future is very, very bright for Norwegian Cruise Lines, and I can't wait for that future to start.
Well, good to see it. I know it has been a very long 17 months, and we might have to take you up on that cruising offer. I know for one, I really need to lower my blood pressure, and a vacation might be in order on a cruise ship.
We know how to do that.
All right, Norwegian Cruise Line. Norwegian Cruise Line President CEO Frank Del Rio. Good to see you. Stay safe.
All right, welcome back to Yahoo Finance Live on this Monday morning. Take a look here at shares of ZipRecruiter, company out with its latest results. Last week, of course, first since the company made its debut in a direct listing back in May. Shares this morning under a little bit of pressure, but the company came out and raised its guidance for both revenue, also raising its forecast for adjusted EBITDA. And joining us now to discuss the outlook for the company and, of course, the labor market at large is ZipRecruiter CEO Ian Siegel. Ian, thanks so much for jumping on this morning. Let's start with the guidance and sort of how you guys are seeing your business such that you're able to come out in an environment where many managements are still reticent to offer forecasts, come out and raise, you know, both that forecast for the adjusted EBITDA profit and then also on the top line, of course.
Well, 2021 has been a year that would be defined as a super spike of hiring interest for employers. And it's a real dichotomy playing out in the job market right now where employers are back in a robust way. They're desperate for talent. They're pulling out all the stops they can to attract as many job seekers as they can to their open opportunities. but the job seekers remain reluctant to return to work full time, particularly for jobs that require them to interact with large numbers of people face to face on a daily basis.
And, you know, Ian, it warms my heart in the first paragraph of your shareholder letter to see JOLTS cited. And of course, we've covered the JOLTS report extensively here on this show. And I'm curious, you know, obviously you guys are a growing marketplace in a growing market, but how you get a sense of sort of what the right comp is on how many open jobs you see relative to, you know, whatever sort of baseline. You know, how much demand for employment is there based on where you're sitting in, you know, sitting within the labor market, and in a way, maybe trying to back out, you know, your growing market share within that?
Well, ZipRecruiter tries to make it easy for job seekers by finding all the jobs that are available anywhere across the web so that job seekers have a single place to search. So we have our own methodologies for going out and effectively finding all the open jobs. And then we can triangulate that with the Bureau of the BLS's data to try and figure out how many open jobs are there. And no matter which source you use right now, fundamentally, there's 40% more open jobs right now today than there was before the pandemic began. And that was already a white hot job market. So what you're looking at right now is sort of an unprecedented reality for job seekers, which is if you want work, there is an abundance of it. If you want to make more money, there is an abundance of opportunity to go find a job that pays you more. So this is a job seekers market like we have never seen. And yet, as I said before, job seekers remain reluctant to rejoin.
And we've heard a good number of executives have told us that they're seeing shifts in their business because of the COVID Delta variant. A lot of travel companies telling us they're seeing an increase in cancellations. Have you seen companies pull back on the number of job postings given the market uncertainty?
I think the whole country is wrestling with what the impact of Delta really is going to be. If we just look at last month's data, whether you're looking at ZipRecruiter data or again looking at the BLS data, you had an astonishing economic recovery playing out, particularly in the leisure and hospitality category, also categories like retail, manufacturing, education, all of these jobs that had been basically downsized in terms of the number of people who were needed to do them because of COVID came roaring back. So it's a little early to say whether Delta is going to derail that momentum. So far, the data is not showing that.
And Ian, it's Julie here. As you're looking at matching between employers and employees, obviously you guys have a lot of insight into how quickly that happens, how well it happens. What are you seeing out there works best right now for employers to attract employees? Are you able to offer them that insight so they can then use it to attract more employees?
It is a complicated job market. I mean, just to give you some perspective on how wide a net employers are casting right now, the number of jobs that require either a college degree or 5+ years experience have fallen in half. The number of jobs that say no experience required, explicitly stated in the job description, has doubled. Employers are raising wages, they're offering signing bonuses, they're offering flexible schedules, and they're still, in many cases, struggling to attract talent. If there is a secret weapon to attract the right job seekers to your job, no one seems to have cracked the code on it yet. It is a really interesting dichotomy that is playing out in the job market right now.
And then, Ian, just finally, you know, from your vantage point, both with what you're doing at ZipRecruiter and what folks on your platform are doing, where does the work from home conversation stand today as we get into the second half of 2021? Did we see that decade of change in 1 year, as so many proclaimed last year? And how do you see that shaking out longer term?
I mean, that is the most fascinating question in the job market right now. Every survey done of job seekers shows between 50 and 60% of them want either hybrid or fully remote work on a go forward basis. This will have a massive impact on the job market if it plays out the way the survey data is telling us that the population of job seekers wants it to. Remains to be seen how employers are going to respond to it, but you can see a shift happening already. If you go back just a year and a half ago, less than 2% of jobs offered fully remote work. Right now, today on ZipRecruiter, more than 10% of jobs are offering fully remote work. So you see employers making that shift as they are in this dogfight to try and attract talent.
The rapid spread of the COVID-19 Delta variant is certainly reshaping the recovery we're seeing in the beaten down travel industry, but that's not stopping Vacasa from moving ahead with plans to go public. The vacation rental management company is planning to come to market in a $4.5 billion SPAC merger with TPG Pace Solutions. And joining me now is the CEO of Vacasa, Matt Roberts. Matt, always good to see you. I know that in recent interviews, you and I have talked about if and when Vacasa was going to go public. Here we are. Talk to us about why now and why via a SPAC with TPG.
Sure. Well, thanks again for having me on. So why now is we're ready. The business is doing fantastic, growing at a really healthy pace. We're at a significant scale. And we can use the capital to continue to benefit the business, you know, invest in our technology team and our technology resources, as well as continue to add more properties to our platform. Why this approach? We certainly could have gone a more traditional approach, but it's really about the partner, partnering with TPG Pace. They have deep domain expertise in the travel industry. Carl Peterson will be joining our board. He was the co-founder of Hotwire. So, you know, it's really the team that we get more than capital. We get a great partner as well.
When do you expect the SPAC merger to be completed, Matt?
Yeah, we just filed our S-4 last week. So however long it takes the SEC to go through that, but probably this fall.
All right. And then so we'll be looking out for that for sure. That'll be at the New York Stock Exchange. What will the ticker symbol be?
We haven't decided on the exchange yet, but it'll be VCSA.
Okay. And we don't know for sure what exchange yet. Is that what I just heard?
That's right. We don't know for sure yet.
Okay. You know, recently Airbnb came out with earnings, and in there warned about the spread of the Delta variant and how that is changing consumer behaviors. They're starting to see an uptick in cancellations or people wanting to push a vacation plans down the road a little bit. What are you seeing there at Vacasa?
Well, thankfully, we are not seeing a tick up in cancellation activity related to the Delta variant, and we're continuing to have incredibly strong bookings. I think vacation rentals, and certainly in our rural markets, continue to be the preferred accommodation source. So maybe that's part of the differences that you're seeing versus others. But business continues to perform exceptionally well, and we are not seeing a spike in or a jump up in cancellations at all.
I think when people see your company and what you do, they may think that other companies like Vrbo and Airbnb are competitors, but you say they're actually partners. Explain that for us.
Yeah, absolutely. So our job and our focus is on the supply side. If you think about the way that the industry grows, is you need to have available nights to sell across the entire ecosystem. And that's our focus. Our focus is on creating a platform that brings high quality supply of nights to guests. And we do it, certainly we do it through our own website, but we also do it through our distribution partners as well. And I call them partners because, you know, we work collaboratively very well together in addressing the most critical part of this, which is supply. You know, there's not enough supply. There's a lot of demand, but there's not enough supply. And that's where we come in.
So talk to me again about the impact, if any, your business is having or experiencing because of the rise in the Delta variant.
Yeah, as I just mentioned, that we're not seeing an increase in cancellations, which is where we would have expected to see it. I think, again, because we're professionally managed and we have really high quality properties and have adopted a high level of care and standards to the guests, so they feel very good about the stay. You know, we're just thankfully we're continuing to have really strong bookings without a spike in any kind of cancellation activity.
Have you seen any sort of a behavioral shift in terms of where people are looking to stay or the duration of their stays?
I'd call it a continuation of the theme that we saw all the way through the pandemic, which is people are still opting for places that they can get outside and experience, you know, and experience different activities. So, you know, that's really the focus, is it continues to be people moving to more of the rural settings or beach or mountain activities.
All right. Well, we are looking forward to you becoming a publicly traded company at some point in the fall. I know we'll have you back then. Vacasa's CEO, Matt Roberts, best of luck to you. Housing prices appear to be pushing prospective buyers into rentals until the housing market cools off. But for many, even the rental market has become too hot to handle. Here to talk about it is Willie Walker, CEO of Walker & Dunlop. Willie, good to see you again. So tell us what you're seeing in your business in terms of demand for these rental properties right now.
Demand is very strong. I would say that the great sort of suburban migration that took place a year ago during the depths of the pandemic to a great degree has ended, and that major cities across the country are seeing people come back to them, and that we're seeing very strong rent growth pretty much across the board in the multifamily industry, even in some cities that were extremely hard hit during the pandemic, such as New York and San Francisco.
Talk to me more about that, because just anecdotally, I know people who were looking for those rental deals that were abundant during the height of the pandemic just a few months ago. What has happened to those deals? I mean, has it quickly become the landlord's market at the moment?
Well, I guess there are a couple of things to keep in mind. The first one is that the single family world can't build houses fast enough to meet demand. And as a result of that, the cost of the existing inventory of single family homes has inflated tremendously, which has pushed that stock of inventory above many people's price points. There isn't a lot of new deliveries, and the new deliveries are being sold at a much higher price point. So that's quite honestly keeping many, many people in multifamily properties. And as people are going back to work and going back to the office, people are looking to get closer to the office. And as you've seen in many instances, CEOs across the country are saying, you're either back in the office by X day or you're not working for our company anymore. And so I think that there's been a big shift in the market from single family back towards multifamily. And that has also allowed for occupancy levels to come back, and rents are being pushed.
What about your business in particular? I saw sales activity up nearly 650% in Q2 year over year, and tripled from pre-pandemic, from Q2 of 2019. That's some incredible, robust demand. Willie, do you expect that to continue this quarter and in subsequent quarters?
As we said on our call a week before last, we actually do. The pipeline as it relates to our sales business on apartment buildings is exceedingly robust right now. And I think what you have to keep in mind there is that there are five commercial real estate asset classes. There's office, retail, industrial, multifamily, and hospitality. And during both the great financial crisis, as well as through the pandemic, multifamily and industrial have held up exceedingly strong. And so as investors are waiting to figure out whether they want to go and invest in an office building, invest in retail, or invest in a hotel, there has been a consistent amount of demand to buy multifamily properties as well as industrial properties. And so that is push this huge surge in demand for multifamily properties and in our business of selling those properties.
What might trip up that demand? Is it going to be higher interest rates? And we know the Fed is already telegraphing that could certainly happen starting in 2022.
Yeah, super interesting to listen to your past, a number of your past panelists that I listened to this morning. I would say it's interesting to look at where rates are today at a 125 10-year. That's significantly lower than many people had expected where the 10-year would be. I would say if you look at something like lumber prices peaked at over $1,550 per thousand board foot back in May. Today, it's all the way back down to lower than $500 per thousand board foot. And so what Jerome Powell has spoken about quite consistently of these inflationary pressures being transitory. Lumber started the year at 900, went up to 1500, and is now down below 500 per thousand board foot. And so I think we're seeing that as capacity is coming on into the markets, some of these heightened and really, really exorbitant inflationary pressures come for a period of time, and then they work their way out of it. And so I would just say that as it relates to rates moving dramatically or the Fed having to move much more quickly, so far the playbook that Jerome Powell has put forth as far as many of these inflationary pressures being transitory is playing out in a lot of things that we're watching.
And finally, Willie, is this a geographic thing or is this a phenomenon you're seeing across the country? Because we've got the Delta variant now running rampant, especially in southern states. I'm curious if you're seeing demand strong in most parts of the U.S. right now.
Yeah, it's, I mean, so much of it is jobs based. And so what you're seeing is that many of those economies that were relatively open during the pandemic have continued to kind of surge forward. So Nashville, Tennessee is an extremely strong market. Most of the Texas markets are all very, very strong. And so what you're seeing is a lot of job growth in those markets. And as a result of that, multifamily and multifamily supply has been picked up very, very quickly. But as I said at the top of the interview, even markets like New York and San Francisco are seeing renewed interest and renewed lease rate inflation, if you will, in the sense of landlords are able to now start to push rents again. And I think one of the big outliers right now, or one of the things we're focusing on, is how long does the extension of the eviction moratorium stay around for? And then the other one is September 6th and the $300 per week supplemental unemployment insurance going off will have a big impact on the labor market. And I think that that will then play into the inflationary numbers that everyone's watching so closely.
All right. Willie Walker, CEO of Walker & Dunlop. Thanks so much for your time today. We appreciate it. It is a big day for investors of Airspan Networks, one of the leaders in software and hardware for 5G network solutions, became a publicly traded company today through its merger with the SPAC New Beginnings Acquisition. It began trading on the New York Stock Exchange under the symbol MIMO. The stock is up about 3.5% right now. And joining me is Airspan CEO, Eric Stonestrom. Eric, good to see you again. I know the last time we spoke, you were planning this SPAC merger. You have been the CEO of Airspan since 1998. Tell us what this milestone means for the company and for you personally.
Yes, thank you, and nice to see you again. This is a tremendous milestone for Airspan, for the employees, for the shareholders, for me personally. It's just a tremendous launch back into the public markets. We've got a very strong set of products that we're bringing to a marketplace that's on fire. The demand side of what we're serving is tremendous. We executed this back successfully, and here we are back in the New York Stock Exchange, and it's really exciting. So it's nice to be here.
Talk to us a little bit about what this business combination with the SPAC is going to mean for revenue going forward. And where are you seeing the most opportunities when it comes to 5G?
Yeah, so we do have a very aggressive growth in front of us. And we're finding through the partnership with the NBA SPAC partner, even more doors are being opened. We're really focused on three segments, all of them growing quickly. The first is the MNO and carrier telecom segment. We make 5G wireless radio access network equipment. I'll point out, since Lucent was acquired by Alcatel, we're the first publicly traded pure play in radio access equipment. And embarking on this SPAC gives us additional horsepower to go after some of our existing markets, such as the carrier market, also some greenfield builds. We've talked about customers like Rakuten in Japan. There are opportunities with new builds in the US, some very exciting opportunities. But the market's also expanding. What we're seeing in 5G is that the technology spend touches every piece of the enterprise segment spending. It's not just carriers, which is what 2G to 3G to 4G was. We're seeing tremendous growth in the private network side through partnerships with great household names that sell equipment into that, companies like HP Enterprise, Cisco, Motorola Solutions. And then the fixed wireless piece of our business is growing very rapidly. The effects that more and more people move more and more data using wireless from stationary places. COVID accelerated that, and it's an opportunity to chase that market as well. So what this has done is efficiently put additional capital on our balance sheet to help with our expansion plans and given us a currency for recruiting, for employees, satisfying customers' needs, and also potentially M&A down the road.
Eric, I know that Airspan has listed cable companies as almost equal to mobile network operators in terms of potential revenue growth. Talk to us about why you're so optimistic about sales of equipment to the cable operators.
Yeah, well, the cable operators have a tremendous asset in delivering telecom services. Today, none of them operate their own networks. They are operating under MVNOs with existing carriers. But tomorrow, the possibility is there to leverage the millions of miles of overhead strand that they have and the significant investment in broadband cable infrastructure. We bring unique products to bear in that regard. We have had a great track record already. We had an award-winning project in Long Island where we put up 25,000 cells in about 9 months, which was an all-time record in terms of outdoor deployment of cells in this way. What we do is we leverage the assets that the cable company has in place and give them a cost model that's tremendously more efficient and more cost-effective than building a network the traditional way.
You know, I'm curious about the ticker symbol, MIMO, M-I-M-O, seems to have nothing to do with the name Airspan Networks or even the SPAC merger. How did you come up with that ticker symbol and what's the meaning behind that?
Yeah, it's actually MIMO, massive input, massive output. And the thing Airspan is really specialized in is moving more data over a limited amount of airwaves in the most cost-effective way. One of the pillars of the technology behind that is having multiple streams in the air, and that's why it's massive input, massive output. That's what's enabling us to get award-winning bits per hertz through the same amount of spectrum. As you know, spectrum has become a very valuable asset, and we just do a better job of moving the information through leveraging MIMO. Coincidentally, we also bought a company aimed at the fixed wireless space called Mimosa, a couple of years back, and if you take the first four letters there, you get to the same place. So the symbol just makes sense, both in terms of our technology differentiation and also some of the new things we've added into the mix to help our growth.
All right, now I will not forget MIMO. Makes sense after you explained it to us, Eric. And finally, I mean, as CEO, you always need to be having your eye out for the headwinds, right, and how the company is going to position itself. What do you see as the short-term headwinds for your company and also for your industry, Eric?
I think the exciting thing is the addressable market is expanding so well. That's giving us many, many more sales opportunities than before. Recruiting top-notch talent is very important in this industry, and having a public currency to do that is something we've achieved today. We continue to focus on the supply chain side of the business and manage the various situations that are in place now among the semiconductor world and the logistics bottlenecks in Asia. We're doing a great job at managing those. Those are the things that are on my mind.
All right. There is a lot on your mind there at the New York Stock Exchange as your company goes public. Really nice Wall Street debut. The stock up now better than 4%. Airspan Network CEO Eric Stonestrom. Good to see you.
Well, we want to turn now to the manufacturing sector and the recreational boating industry specifically, and one leader within this space. Now, the Brunswick Corporation recently delivered record second quarter results with revenue of $1.6 billion, jumping 57% over the same period last year. Now, here to talk more about the company's latest initiatives and the summer recreational season overall is Brunswick Corporation CEO David Foulkes. David, thank you so much for joining the program today. And one of the phenomena that we've been seeing during the pandemic from companies like your own, as well as from Polaris and some of the other leaders in this space, has been this demand for recreational vehicles, boats, and equipment. What have these demand trends looked like so far in 2021, and what is your expectation for the rest of summer and the back half of this year?
Thank you for having me on the show. Yeah, the demand has continued to be very, very strong as we've gone through the first half of the year. I think industry is up about 16%. Retail versus last year for the first half. And we expect that to carry through. We're expecting the full year to be up kind of mid to high single digits, I would say, for the full year. Free demand would be considerably higher than that, but we have really low inventory levels, as you may know, that are occurring across multiple verticals and also some of the supply chain disruptions. So we think that the kind of free demand will be tempered somewhat, and we'll be in that mid to high single digit up for the full year.
I mean, who doesn't love going out on a boat in the middle of the summer? It is a lot of fun. Tell us about, though, and I'm thinking of my Uncle Barney had a Crestliner over on Sebago Lake in Maine years ago. But tell us about your autonomous connectivity, electrification, shared access strategy for boating, because I've seen lots of boaters crash that thing into the dock. And I got to bet this is going to help avoid that.
Yeah, so you see those trends of autonomy, connectivity, electrification, and shared access across multiple verticals. And they're certainly making their presence felt in marine as well. You know, marine, the way that they appear in marine, the way they manifest in marine is sometimes a little bit different. If you think about autonomy in road vehicles, often the final objective is to try and remove the driver from the driving experience. But of course, if you're in boating, driving the boat is part of the experience. So our objective is to try and assist the driver in particularly stressful or difficult situations, particularly maybe if they're less experienced. So our focus is on things like obstacle avoidance, eventually automatic docking and anchoring. So taking the stress out of the situations where particularly the more novice boater, you know, might need a bit of help. We have great connected solutions. So if you buy a boat from us now, frequently it comes with an app that allows you to remotely connect to the boat, diagnose the boat. It comes with theft deterrents. You can geofence the boat. And then we announced earlier this year that we'd be introducing a number of electric propulsion systems and electric boats, as well as a system that replaces the generator on a boat with an electric solution. So that is a big push, particularly in the smaller horsepower, kind of smaller boat range for us. And then finally, the S in ACES is shared access. You may know we have a great model called Freedom Boat Club, which is a model where you essentially join a club, book your boat on an app. The boat is ready for you when you arrive, and then you just drop it off when you finish with it. So it's super convenient. We already have 67,000 members in Freedom Boat Club, more than 300 locations, including now a number of locations in Europe. So that is a very growing model.
I am a big fan of what you said when you talked about electrification for the motors within some of these vehicles. I have a buddy. She bought a beautiful sailboat. She sails in Chicago. It's not your brand. Electric. Lots of problems. What are you finding? And again, I want to reiterate, this was not one of your products. But what are you finding with this transition to electric motors, whether they be in sailboats or actually power boats that we love to operate?
Well, I think what we're finding and what we must, of course, do is engineer with the same quality levels that we engineer our conventional propulsion systems and boats. And in the marine application, there are a lot of considerations there that are additional. Obviously, there's water present. So sealing is really important. And it's very important that we make those products very reliable, because you certainly don't want to get stranded on the water in a situation like that. So we have brought in incredible capability from the auto industry, from aviation, from even the electric vehicle industry, to make sure that we engineer these products to the very, very highest standards. And really, just being electric is not enough. They have to be reliable. They have to be quiet. They have to be sociable. They have to be easy to interact with. And we're focusing on all those things as we develop our product lines.
All right, David Foulkes, Brunswick Corporation CEO.
We're going to bring back into the stream Fubo TV co-founder and CEO David Gandler to talk about not only their earnings, which were quite remarkable, revenue up 196% from a year ago, but also the future for streaming. Because if you haven't cut the cord yet, it's time. And it's so easy to do. Just got to let you know, David, real quickly, that we may have to interrupt this because President Biden is going to be addressing the nation about Afghanistan. We'll be taking that. But let me talk about first the growth you saw, because this field of streaming TV offerings and platforms like yours, it's quite competitive. There's a lot out there, and yet you grew revenue. Why is Wall Street punishing you today?
Well, I don't know if they're punishing us, but you know, we did announce an ATM, so we'll be raising capital. And that capital raise is really based off, as you said, really some phenomenal numbers. The growth rates have been outstanding to date. We've beat and raised guidance four times now. We've been public less than a full year. So we're very excited about the future. And we led both traditional and non-traditional pay TV platforms and net ads, those that we're reporting, of course. So we're feeling really good about the future of streaming.
David, this is Emily McCormick. I wanted to ask, Fubo TV, as you mentioned, one of the few streaming companies we've been seeing raising its outlook, especially on subscribers, and even now that more in-person activities have been resuming. And I'm wondering, is this a temporary boost now that more live sports programming is returning, since that is such a core part of the Fubo TV content library, or is this growth sustainable?
Yeah, this is definitely sustainable growth. We had a very strong second quarter. You know, if you look at hours viewed during COVID for 2022, the average daily usage was about 7.2 hours. That's per day. We are down from 7.2 to just 7 hours per day. So viewership is still strong going into the summer. And, you know, we're very comfortable with the level of growth and sustainability of our platform.
You know, in our last discussion, we talked about engagement for television. And I'm not talking about commenting through Twitter while you're watching a show. Your sports book, which is going to launch, it's in the fourth quarter, really takes the television experience to a whole new level. And you've already tested this. Is there going to be more than just sportsbook coming in regards to engagement?
Yeah, so interactivity is a very important component of the Fubo platform. We are in the process of redefining television and building a category-defining company within a space that is video and sports betting. But I think you're right. There are many use cases for a lot of the technology that we're bringing to market, and we think it's going to work well for live television. It'll work well for reality TV. It'll work well for news programming. So, you know, we're really focused on creating a more of a lean-in experience, moving users from being passive to active.
Where are you seeing the biggest growth areas in terms of demographics or geographically for continuing to grow those users?
That's a great question. And we what we found is the median age of the average Fubo subscriber now is 42. That's well below the 59 years of a median, median 59 years of for a cable customer. At the same time, we're really focused on, you know, on big cities where you have more sophisticated users, folks that are interested in local sports programming. And, you know, we found a lot of strength in key DMAs like New York and Houston and Los Angeles and Miami. So, again, very focused on the coast, but starting to see a lot of traction in the Midwest.
David, whenever you join us, my, you know, entrepreneurial hopes and ambitions, although I'll keep my day job, they really grow because, you know, when you have connected television through an app like Fubo TV, you are collecting data on what someone like me is watching. But in the background, the digital advertising, it's much more efficient because then I can be presented with things that I might want to buy. So where I'm going with this is, you remember that TV show, The Truman Show? They used to do product placement with buy this oatmeal. It could be much less intrusive and perhaps more sophisticated. And I got to believe you're looking in that, or is that already in play?
So you are absolutely right. We are definitely looking in this area. You know, right now, Fubo is a dual revenue stream, which is subscription-based and advertising-based. And, you know, we've been developing technology around machine learning to better improve recommendations, you know, for surfacing content that may be valuable for your specific household. And the same is true on the advertising side. So we're also in the process of looking and developing technologies that we think will allow that one-to-one relationship based off of the data that we're able to collect and analyze on the platform.
We appreciate your joining us always to update us on how you're doing and keep up the good work. Congratulations on the past quarter. David Gandler, Fubo TV's co-founder and CEO.